You are listening to Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast. This is Series 3, Episode Number 4 for Wednesday, February the 8th, 2023. J.J. Sefton, along with my co-host and co-blogger and colleague, CBD. And today we are once again joined, after a very long and unintentional absence, by our co-blogger at Ace of Spades and dear friend, the great Buck Throckmorton. Gentlemen, good morning.
Well, good morning. It's a real pleasure to be back on.
Well, we're glad to have you. I was talking to Sefton earlier, and I was talking about how much I enjoyed your skewering of electric vehicles and autonomous cars and all that kind of neat stuff. And you do it with data, which is just such a delight. Anyway, we're going to get to that later on, but let's talk about the 800-pound demented thief in the room. That is the State of the Union address from last night. I thought it was quite typical. Nothing he said surprised me. His vitriol and his arrogance and his bald-faced lying, I think some people were surprised by, but I don't see anything surprising at all. That is what he has been doing for his 50-year career in politics. I think he lies and he blusters to make up for the fact that he is a quite unintelligent and quite unimaginative man. And unfortunately, he is our president.
Yeah, several things about that. One, the fabrications and the lies he tells. And it was the little bit I saw snippets after the fact, I didn't want to suffer through it at the time. I almost kind of enjoy that it's become a little bit like British Parliament, where he says a lie and the gallery howls an objection about being slandered that way, as well they should. And what's also interesting, quick aside, is somehow amidst all this, Mitt Romney was deeply upset that a liar, a backbench congressman from New York, was even there. And we have to listen to this president with such an amazing record of lies and distortions of the truth. And some of these polite Republicans that can only punch right, who are they worried about? A backbench Republican House member.
You bring up British Parliament, the opposing parties are separated in the parliament chambers by the length of two swords so that it doesn't get bloody, which obviously it's sort of a message. It's not real. But I think that's something that we need to bring back in the United States. The idea of camaraderie and bipartisanship in our legislative chambers is pathetic. It has gotten us to where we are right now. And I think that a little bit more of anger and a little bit more vitriol spouted by both sides, well, actually, the Democrats do it all the time, but by the Republican Party, is nothing but good for America. America needs to hear that we have an opposition party. It isn't the Republicans right now. We have, you know, a few of the Trump-curious congressmen who do that sort of thing, but we need 200-plus congressmen to be angry all of the time and express their anger.
Yeah, I was going to say, just there's so many things sort of firing that you guys are talking about, just about the speech and my reactions to it. You know, the idea of George Santos, whatever you think of him as a liar, I mean, compared to, as we said, the 50-year career plus career of not only lying, but criminality to the point of now treasonous behavior of Joe Biden is beyond the pale. And it's a joke to even compare the two. Does that make George Santos a saint or a decent person or, you know, someone that is that we should be looking up to? We could debate that at another time. But for me, and we talked about this, CBD, and I've written about it, I don't care if George Santos is the incarnation of Brian Williams and whoever else and Commander McBragg. If he does nothing more than vote no against everything that the Democrats propose and the RINOs propose, then I'm all in favor of. In fact, I want him to be our presidential or vice presidential candidate. If that is nothing more than he has done the right thing by this nation, by opposing them. That's my bottom line with George Santos. The other positive that happened yesterday, and just before I even get into there, you'll recall in one of the Obama State of the Union speeches where he said, and I don't even know what it was about, and I think the congressman's name from South Carolina was Joe Wilson, if I'm not mistaken, he literally got up and said, "You lie." And, you know, of course, Maureen Dowd later on, of course, he interpolated that as "you lie, boy," considering, you know, saying that Joe Wilson, the only reason that he objected to that was because Obama was black, to whatever the libel was. And the other thing is, let's not forget that during Obama's speech, when something was struck down, I don't know if it was, I forgot what the law was, and then he literally looking right at Samuel Alito and literally saying j'accuse to him and just calling him out in the State of the Union address. And Alito, to just all he did was shook his head and said, that's wrong. That's not true. And this time, Alito, and I believe it was Clarence Thomas and maybe Neil Gorsuch, did the right thing by not showing up to this part and what it was. Had the entire GOP not shown up, that really would have sent a message. But of course, CBD, as you allude, we have no opposition party. We have a civil war within the party for the heart and soul of perhaps an opposition party, but you know that is to be determined going down the road. But this whole thing was ridiculous. And the fact that Biden never mentioned once the 20-ton balloon in the room, which was the Chi-Com balloon that was there, or he lied about it, saying that there's nothing to worry about. He never mentioned it once. And this whole thing was just a joke. So take it as you will.
Absolutely. And just one more comment about all that. There's no honor in being slandered and not defending yourself. And somehow that there's the notion that good Republicans can be lied to or have their principles, their beliefs, and frankly, what their the legislation they're proposing, have someone lie about it, that you're supposed to nod and clap because that's decorum. That's preposterous. And all the stuff flying around today from the Democrats about how the ugly decorum of this. Remember when they we're all upset about Nancy Pelosi ripping up the script behind Donald Trump. I don't either.
Yeah, excellent point. And decorum needs to get thrown out. I think that probably would bring back the appropriate tone to Congress. Let's move on to something that might not be the most pressing issue in the whole world, but it certainly is interesting. And that is a topic that Buck has written about at least once or twice in his morning rant. And that is that the NFL is not doing very well. In particular with the under 50 demographic, the people who are soon to be the big spenders in any economy. Buck, why don't you give us a couple of minutes on that?
I was always just a casual NFL fan at best. My passion was always Major League Baseball, and they successfully ran me off, of course. But NFL, I would watch it. I'd have it on as background music on Sunday, maybe keep up with the Oilers, Texans, and Cowboys. But 2016, my only interest in the NFL was tracking their ratings. And above all else, they have never recovered from the kneeling. When people talk about it's back, it's not. It's still down significantly from 2015 ratings. It's rebounded from 2016, but well below what it was. But most interesting is the collapse in viewership of under 50 age viewers. And when so often, like with the Tonight Show, Leno had to go because despite his great ratings, his demographic was over 54, over 52, whatever it was. That's what the NFL is now. Their ratings are absolutely collapsing among the under 50s. And one stat I put in that column was that in the past 10 years, the number of Super Bowl viewers aged 18 to 49 decreased from 52 million to 34 million. And while this is all going on, the NFL moved its Thursday night game from broadcast or cable to streaming. And the over 50 demographic is not keen on streaming. The ratings have been a debacle. And so now Amazon is having to refund some advertising. So it's going to be interesting to see going forward what becomes of the NFL with the younger viewers just not tuning in.
Boy, I love hearing this kind of stuff. The NFL, more than any other sporting organization, has embraced woke culture and has embraced the vile and racist Black Lives Matter. And for them to be suffering, even, you know, comparatively suffering, is a very, very good thing. And what fascinates me about the idea that they are shifting to a streaming platform or a streaming revenue stream, actually, is that it takes the games out of the public purview. It takes it away from, you know, just the casual listener and the casual viewer. And I'm fascinated by that because it simply cannot survive if they are trying to reach 300 million people. And then they're trying to expand into Europe and possibly Asia. Who the hell knows? I mean, for all I know, they're planning, you know, the Shanghai rice eaters for the NFL in the next 20 years. But it does not seem like a viable financial plan. I don't understand what numbers they are looking at when they go after the streaming audience.
I have to wonder, you know, and again, I echo Buck's sentiments about football. I used to be a pretty pretty interested, shall we say, and vocal fan of the New York Giants, to a lesser extent the New York Jets. But when Colin Kaepernick came on the scene, that was it. I said goodbye. And by embracing this insanity of, you know, the last bastions of Americanism, or of just forget about even Americanism, but just comedy, C-O-M-I-T-Y, not C-O-M-E-D-Y, but comedy among people where you put your differences aside, you root for a team and there's no politics involved in it. There's no nothing except the game. And so now all of a sudden, when this was interjected into the scene, it was just, that was it for me. I couldn't tolerate it. It was, you know, and beyond that, that was just the straw that broke the camel's back. Between Michael Vick and between the thuggery of Aaron Hernandez and so many other people beating up their girlfriends and doing all this kind of nonsense, let alone crossing over from baseball, the whole steroid nonsense. And then it just was a big turnoff. And I just had no interest in following it anymore. It didn't matter if my team was doing well or whatever. I didn't care. And there's a parallel here also with streaming, with Hollywood. Over the last however many decades, Hollywood has gone from the last bastions of having sort of showmen and show women and people who wanted to put on a show and, of course, make money, because as an old boss of mine, when I worked in my Hollywood days, said, you know, this isn't show art, it's show business. But at the same token, you have to give the people what they want. And I guarantee you that people do not want to be scolded. They don't want transsexualism. They do not want to be told that America stinks, that America is horrible, and that, you know, with Avatar, with, you know, we're polluting the earth and we're destroying the earth and we're the ones to blame for it. They don't want to see it. But what does Disney do? They just have this show now. I forgot what it was, a cartoon where they might have backed off a little bit on the critical race nonsense or on the transsexual and homosexual nonsense. But they just had a cartoon basically saying that America is an illegitimate slave country and that Abraham Lincoln did not want to abolish slavery. He lied about it. So all of these things together, and you have, people wonder, why are they doing this? Well, I think they think they're going to be supported by the government. I think they think the government is going to bail them out if they tow a political meme that the Democrat Party and the leftists and the globalists are behind, that America is a racist, horrible country, and we have to appeal to these fringe minorities and fringe viewpoints that have no basis in reality, and we'll do it. We may lose money, but the government is always going to be there perhaps to bail us out if we tow the party line. And frankly, I find it disgusting. So if the NFL and then baseball and whatever else dies, I could care less. Let them die a miserable death.
I'm with Buck. I'm a baseball fan. I was always a casual watcher at best of the NFL. Now I try to pay as little attention as possible. If I'm in a social situation, I'll watch the game with everybody else just because, you know, it's the easy way to drink beer. But baseball was very special to me. Until the same thing happened with Buck, until they started kneeling and until Major League Baseball decided that politics is an appropriate thing to have in America's game. And they were wrong. And they drove me away. I was a lifelong fan of the New York Yankees. Now I couldn't care less. I'll look at a headline. I won't read the articles. I don't think I watched an entire game last year. And for me, that's just unheard of. I would watch 100 games a year and love every single one of them. But they've managed to destroy what I think is a spectacular game.
Yeah, but no, very sad. It was, I guess with the Major League Baseball, it wasn't so much kneeling. It was the Astros were my team. The first game of that bizarre 2020 COVID season, I'd been a subscriber for many years to the MLB network so I could watch my team wherever. And what do I see? But Black Lives Matter stuff slathered all over the place. And I guess what was really offensive to me is that part of the Astros network is Baton Rouge, where Black Lives Matter had murdered police. And really, it's just so offensive.
You know, on a personal note, and again, for me, I think the BLM stuff and the racism was the absolute nail in the coffin. I mean, it was the nuke, if you will, that ended it for me. But it goes baseball for me. The souring of it goes back maybe 20 years before, when you had the whole steroid debacle between Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa and all of these. And what's his name? I forgot his name. The other one was Barry Bonds and whomever else. Yeah, that really
about half the probably about half
McGwire, yeah.
that really just soured me on it. Part of it also was the fact that I'm, you know, at the time, and I may be married now, but I have no kids. So I don't have anything to share my experience with. When my father, you know, of blessed memory, was alive, he was a diehard Mets fan, and we enjoyed watching the Mets. And after he passed away, and you know, he grew up in Chicago, was a Chicago White Sox fan. And ironically, that the year that he passed was when the White Sox won it. So he was hopefully looking down from heaven and enjoying that. But and then after that, it was the second coming of the Mets, or rejuvenation of them, with people like Jose Reyes and David Wright. And I was sort of watching it. I was very interested in it. But then all of a sudden, it just, the joy of it went out for me when I couldn't really share it with anybody. And nowadays, I cannot imagine, God forbid, if I had any children, who would be, you know, of the woke brainwashed variety from college. It would just kill me to have to sit through a game to watch, you know, the gay pride flags, the Black Lives Matter flags, the leaning, the kneeling. And then coupled with that, just, you know, just the whole nature of the changing environment of free agency, where, you know, there's nobody in a team long enough, with the exception of maybe it was David Wright and Reyes managed to last with the Mets for about a decade. So at least that was something. But now the politicization of everything, and of course, it's everywhere. There is no safe bastion. If it's everything is politics to the left, and of course, when they invade something, they do it to erode the social fabric. So for me, it was dead before the whole critical race nonsense, but certainly that's it's the death of it for me.
I would suggest that they embrace the idea that they are going to erode the traditional social and cultural fabric and create their own new one. That's why they're trying to mainstream transsexualism. That's why they're trying to mainstream homosexuality. That's why they're trying to do all of these odd and frankly disturbing things. Because they want to create their new world. And the fact that it doesn't jibe with tradition, with millions of years of evolution and thousands of years of cultural development, they don't care.
There were I'll let you jump in, but just there were two sort of little anecdotes to that. One was there's a hockey player from the Pittsburgh Penguins who refused to put on the gay pride jersey. And he took all kinds of shit for it, but God bless him, he stood his ground on that. And then there was the
yes, that player, guess what happened to his jerseys?
Well, I have no idea.
Became incredibly popular. Isn't that amazing?
Yes, they became very popular. In fact, they sold out.
Amazing.
So what does that tell amazing. You
that, exactly. But the other one was the poor player who was who was knocked unconscious, and we all thought it might have been the clot shot related thing or whatever it was. And when he came back, I believe he thanked the Lord above. I couldn't believe he didn't thank Al Sharpton or Patrice Cullors for his miraculous coming out of his coma. But yeah, those things are, you know, that didn't get covered, of course. But again, there are sparks of humanity with people. They're trying to, you know, to have their faith and live as God-fearing people. And not even that. Just be left alone. We don't want to keep politics out of the game. We just want to play the game. We just want to enjoy ourselves. We just want to make a living at this, and we just want to please the fans. And that whole thing is just no fun of any kind. And that extends, of course, it extends to sports. There will be no refuge. You will not be left alone until you are forced to, for lack of a better word, kneel before the lords of leftism.
Now, because that sort of just gets into something else I've been pondering. I've kind of tried to outline, don't know how to write it, but I think most of us historically were leave me alone conservatives, and come to this sad realization that leave me alone is not an option. So it's either they impose on me or I impose on them. I don't want to impose my beliefs, my ways, my interests on others, but the only options are leave me alone or if you won't leave me alone, either I have to adapt yours or you adapt mine. I'll tell you which one I'm going to go with.
That's an excellent point. And that's a change that has to occur in the United States if we are to have any hope of recovering what is the greatest country on earth. Buck, that's wow.
Nailed it. You know, the flag, the Gadsden flag of don't tread on me. It's not just, you know, there's a couple of meanings there. It's not just don't, you know, it's exactly what it means. Just leave us alone. That's all we want. But when you poke the snake, you will get bitten. Well, that remains to be seen so far. But as I've noted, the American people have a very, very, very slow to anger and a long tolerance for all sorts of depredations and abuses, as I mentioned and highlighted in Abraham Lincoln's speech in 1838, long before he was president, at the Young Men's Lyceum of Springfield, Illinois. He said, we do not have a taste for this kind of thing. We just, you know, we are slow to anger, but when it comes, there will be a reaction. And we have been poked and prodded and abused for so long now, and it's just getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And just at some point, the question is, will there be a reaction, and what will that reaction be? So, you know.
I had a discussion with one of our brats about Duval County in Florida, which apparently has removed something like 175 or 178 books from their school, district curriculum. And he was upset because one of the books was about Henry Aaron. He's a fanatical baseball fan, and he loves Hank Aaron. And that upset him. I said, well, you know, first of all, we don't know what's in that book. Second of all, how do you feel about books about, you know, Johnny and his two mothers, or Sally and her two fathers? And he said, oh, okay, yeah, I understand. That shouldn't be in the schools. And this exposes what is unfortunately a typical American reaction to a fundamental problem. That is that we ignore it, and we ignore it, and we ignore it, and then we go overboard. And I think that is what's going to happen throughout the country, well, throughout the red portions of the country. We are going to lose books about Hank Aaron. Now, again, I don't know. For all I know, it was pure critical race theory bullshit, and it absolutely should be removed from the school curriculum. I don't know, but I think it exposes our tendency to overreact after years and years and years of doing nothing. But that speaks to what Buck just said, and that is that we have to push back. We can't simply expect to be left alone and survive with our country intact. And pushing back, you know, if we lose out on books about Hank Aaron, okay, well, that's something that we should be able to tolerate. If we also get rid of books about Sally and her two moms, or three moms.
You know, you're not going to have one book written about Hank Aaron. There's going to be dozens, hundreds of books that can be written about Hank Aaron. It's just that when you paint, if the book, the thrust of the book is Hank Aaron was, as a black man, was abused, and he only made it because white people let him make it, and so on and so forth, and he's a victim, so on and so on and so on. And I'm leaving Hank Aaron's words out of this because I don't know what his politics were towards the end of his life. I would hope he had been silent about all this stuff. I'm not sure. But again, the answer to any kind of speech that you don't like is more speech. But let's take out the garbage that is. And even this, I am a free speech absolutist. If you want to have a book, whether it's Jive Camp, whether it's the 1619 Project or whatever the hell it is, sure, let's have it. But let's have it. And even Hitler's Mein Kampf. And this is a third rail. Let's have the book. But as long as there is, put it in context to what the book is, what its meaning is, why it was written, and so on and so forth, and counterbalance it with things that are coming from, whether it's Hillsdale College, or whether it's Rush Limbaugh's Rush Revere series, and so on and so forth, and the 1776 Project, all the better. But that's the problem. The left does not want this. The left wants their view of the world, and every other view of the world is to be considered evil and to not be allowed and to be silenced. And that, there's the problem. And as far as reacting to things, well, at a certain point, you know, when you have life-threatening stage 4 cancer that's about to kill you, you know something? Sometimes radical surgery and radical procedures are the only thing that's needed to even try to stabilize, let alone save your life.
I wanted to get back to what you were talking about with real quick on the banned books. I'm so sick of that term, banned books, and the left and the media and the newspapers all talking about banned books. And so I'm ready for it. The moment anyone says banned books to me, I say, so you agree that we should have in school libraries When Harry Became Sally, which reveals the horrors of the transgender thing that's being imposed on our kids, and that you support putting into school libraries Irreversible Damage, the transgender craze seducing our daughters. I have those two books memorized, and that's my response. And no, that can't go in our libraries. So they do favor censorship, but it's not censorship. A library and a school for children is not saying no one can own it. It's saying, as the responsible adults fostering the education of our children, we need books in there that foster their education, not political agendas. Frankly, my book, the books that I'm referencing about transgenderism don't need to be in the library, but neither do the books pushing transgenderism. But I'm not going to stand for this talk about censoring. Yeah, let's put all the books in those libraries that I want. As also JJ just mentioned, let's get Rush Revere's patriotic books in there to teach our kids history.
I think it's even worse than that. I think the problem is that even the word censor is incorrect. These books were removed from the curriculum of the school district. They were not removed from public libraries throughout the country. They were not removed from Amazon. They were not removed from the various internet booksellers. These are absolutely accessible. They simply are not being forced onto unsuspecting children without the approval of those children's parents. That is the issue. My personal desire is that these books be removed from the schools and put in the public library. It's fine with me, but it should not be shoved down children's throats without the approval of their parents.
And isn't it funny how the people screaming about banned books in Maple Street Elementary School library are completely okay with a conservative being banned by Amazon, which has a monopoly on darn near on Kindles, on e-readers.
Yes. Excellent point.
And isn't it funny that all of a sudden you have parents and other people, you know, claiming that parents have no right to their children. That's the ultimate goal of the whole thing, is that the state is going to become the parent. But parents right now have no right to dictate what and what will not be taught to their children. It's the teachers who have that right. And that is absolutely perverse. And that's why you had the Department of Justice and the National Association of School Boards colluding with this White House, whoever the hell is running it. Certainly it's not sponge brain shits pants, but whoever it is running it, to try to paint parents who object to what's going on at school boards as terrorists and insurrectionists who need to be investigated or arrested for some sort of for hate crimes and for inciting violence. And this is where we're headed. And that's what it's really all about.
Agreed. All right, folks, we're running very long, so we're going to take a short break and we will be back with a spy balloon. Isn't that exciting?
Very exciting. And we are back. CBD, J.J. Sefton, the great Buck Throckmorton is our guest today at the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks podcast on the Cut Jib Newsletter Ace of Spades Radio Network. And, of course, the big story that broke late last week was a beautiful, gigantic 200-foot diameter balloon from communist China floating across the Great Plains and right above our ICBM fields in Montana. And of course, nobody did anything about it. And it was a complete surprise to everybody, except it wasn't a surprise, not to this cockamamie administration. And so we have Chinese spy balloons flying over our heads. And if that is what they are indeed, if they didn't contain explosives, if they didn't contain another, accidental on purpose virus from a wet market or whatever, and they're just probing us and testing us and poking their nose, their thumbs in our eyes. And this is just an intolerable and insane situation. But again, every situation that we just spoke about in the last segment is intolerable and insane. But so this is just this just takes the cake, in my view. It's unbelievable.
I found it to be offensive in many, many ways. The first one, of course, is that we didn't see it before it crossed over into the continental United States. I don't know what path it took, but we should have known about it. And the second thing is the idea that we can't shoot it down because we're going to hurt somebody on the ground. The vast majority of the United States, certainly in the West, is empty. There's nobody underneath it. And my feeling is that the people of Montana would have been perfectly content for an F-22 to put a couple hundred rounds of 20-millimeter cannon rounds into those balloons and have it drop onto Montana. The chances of hurting somebody are trivial. And then the third thing, of course, is that they claimed that it's been happening a lot and that it happened underneath under President Trump's administration. And to their credit, many of his officials, I'm not sure what you would call them, came out publicly and very forcefully said, no, that's crap. I would have known about it, and it didn't happen.
Yeah, it was John Radcliffe, who I believe one of who's, maybe even Bolton might have even come out and said that, that it never happened. But here's the thing. It's like, number one, we have this thing called NORAD, the North American, it's the early warning defense system we've had since the Cold War with the Canadians. Now, NORAD is their job is to, you know, to detect incoming missiles that are coming over the polar ice cap, either from it was traditionally from Russia or from China or from wherever, or launched from anywhere in the world to give us an early warning about a potential situation and to alert our response to that, if God forbid a doomsday scenario like that were to happen. But for some reason, NORAD didn't detect it. Now, NORAD is able to detect once a year Santa Claus coming from the pole. I don't know how they could have missed this one. It doesn't make any sense. But one thing, CBD, that you mentioned, that they didn't want to shoot it down because they were afraid it might hurt somebody on the ground. Now, this sort of is either rank incompetence or a lie. It may have, because of course it wouldn't hurt anybody. It's depopulated. But then you've got to ask yourself, well, why would they even say that? What do they know that's in this balloon? The wreckage itself isn't necessarily going to hurt anybody, but did they know that perhaps it could have contained a biological agent, an explosive device? If they knew ahead of time that this thing was dangerous and they're now saying, well, we didn't want to shoot it down because it was, you know, we didn't want to hurt anybody, that leads to a malice aforethought that they knew the thing was there and they didn't want to do anything about it. And that's almost as bad as incompetence and supposedly not detecting it in the first place. And that is really alarming.
That's exactly right. And don't forget, back in the 1940s, we used to have above ground nuclear explosions all over the American West. And I think one toxic Chinese spy balloon that's crashing in the plains of eastern Montana is ultimately an environmental blip, no matter how bad the payload was. That said, if they suspected the payload was that bad, what's being withheld from us? And that's ultimately where we get to just the exasperation. I'm being lied to, and I know I'm being lied to, and it's just exhausting that the president seems to be compromised by China, or the head of our military, our highest ranking military officer has already effectively pledged his fealty to China, that he wouldn't attack them if his commander-in-chief ordered when Trump was president, and China does this. So is it a dry run? Sort of like the 9/11 dry runs that were done, darn good chance. Was there some that could either gather electronic data or a test run to how to jam electronic data? I assume the worst. I don't know, but I do know that my government is lying to me, and that's so sad.
Yeah, you're talking about an electromagnetic, an EMP, which if that did burst, that would fry our electronics and literally wipe out half the population within several weeks, because everything, every computer chip and everything in our lives is all across the spectrum runs on computers. When you fry our electronics, we're doomed. I mean, that is really that has the potential as a genocidal event to wipe out millions of people. But the Chinese are so embedded and have so many people in their pockets, not just politicians, but corporations, the schools, the media. There was a story, I forget where it was, where the Chinese squelched a story that was critical about their government and about their COVID response and other things that they were guilty of, because they own whatever the outlet is here in the United States. Plus these think tanks, like the Biden think tank, which is the irony of calling something named after Joe Biden a think tank is laughable at best. But they are in our colleges. They are in our defense contractors. The fact that Fauci was these labs that are now in China were being funded perhaps by the NIH, the CDC, actually funded our destruction or helped to fund our destruction by weaponizing this virus and turning it into COVID-19. And now that leads us back to our everyone's favorite country, Ukraine, where there may actually be bioweapons labs in Ukraine that we are partially or wholly funding because we can't do this research legally on our own soil. But going back to China, you know, if it's a dry run, they're probing not just our defenses, but our resolve in dealing with them. And of course, we have no resolve because Joe is in their back pocket, as are so many politicians, you know, across both sides of the aisle, not just Fang Fang Bang Bang, the farting Eric Swalwell, but Mitch McConnell's wife, Elaine Chao, her family is a huge family, a very, very wealthy holdings in China itself. And that, you know, is just it's unbelievable. So this whole situation, and Buck, you were talking about Mark Milley. That was in the wake, I believe, of January, the election that was in 2020. And Mark Milley was fantasizing that somehow, you know, Donald Trump was not going to leave office, and that he was going to launch some sort of a false flag event as a war, perhaps against the Red Chinese. And he was assuring the Red Chinese that the U.S. military would not follow, basically would be insubordinate against Donald Trump. But it also raises the question of general insubordination.
If that's not a perfect example of why we need civilian control of the military, I can't think of a better one.
I agree completely. It's just heartbreaking. Not only do we need civilian controlled military, we need a government of the people by the people, which we don't have anymore because we have the government of the bureaucracy for the bureaucracy.
Going back to this incident with, you know, there was actually a, you know, if there was insubordination, there sure was. We know that during the drawdown in Afghanistan, not the drawdown, but the attacks on ISIS and when Donald Trump wiped them out basically in Syria, and he wanted to withdraw troops from that region. And he was, you know, he said, I'm ordering troops out of the region, and I may be mixing my countries. It could have been Afghanistan, but you're
no,
correct.
It was Syria. You're correct.
It was Syria. And he ordered troops out of Syria, and the military refused to obey those orders. And they kept the troops there. And this is absolute rank insubordination. And it's almost to the point of treason, where people could by the Uniform Code of Military Justice, if you disobey an order from a superior, you could be court-martialed and perhaps hanged or shot for treason. And this is what they did to Donald Trump. Now, did they do this during the Trump administration? There might have been balloons from China flying over the United States, and if NORAD and the generals knew about this and they kept this from Donald Trump, that is just I'm apoplectic at that right now. And here we have it. They're doing it again. Biden may very well have known about it because he's in bed with the Red Chinese. But at the same token, if they're keeping this information from the commander in chief, whoever that may be, this is an intolerable situation. And CBD, yes, we need civilian control of the military. But if the civilian control are people like John Bolton or Tony Blinken or the usual gang of idiots that infect the Department of Defense and Foggy Bottom, count me out. This just shows the rot, the level of corruption at the very highest levels where it matters the most. This is a danger to our national security.
What is most shocking to me is how cheap buying America turned out to be. You know, when in World War II, the entire industrial might of America was directed at the destruction of the Axis powers. The entire industrial might of China is not directed at the destruction of America. They're spending probably less than the cost of an aircraft carrier, and they have purchased enough politicians to control our policy. What an incredible investment they have made. It was cheap. What a bargain.
And they've also got it all set up and arranged so that if you criticize it, you're a racist, CBD. How dare you be anti-Chinese?
The strategy is it's a strategy of I think it's called total war. I may be butchering it, but what they're doing, it's absolute war on every front. And what they're doing, it's not just military conflict, but it is literally subverting and subjugating every aspect of our government, of our schools, of our media, of our society, as if the Red Chinese really need to do that. They have willing help from communists of the American variety. They're willing to take us down, China or no China. They want America destroyed, no matter who is going to be on top, whether it's from Davos, whether it's Islam, or whether it's Beijing. But this is what they're doing. They are waging a total, essentially a war on all fronts. And as you said, CBD, it's dirt cheap. When they can throw $20 million at a think tank at the University of Pennsylvania, or control, you know, a couple of scientists who are working at Lawrence Livermore Laboratory or wherever it is, or control the media to have people who are pro-Chinese in the media, it's pennies. It's nothing. They're literally, they will conquer us without necessarily even firing a shot. This is what they're doing, and we better wake up to this. But for sure, it may very well be that this balloon is just poking, is testing our not only our defenses, but our resolve. But if NORAD is looking at this thing, and for sure, if you can't see a 20-ton giant balloon that's 200 feet across, drifting across on the jet stream in the stratosphere, and you're not going to report that, yeah, something is really wrong. And that is not a failing of NORAD not seeing it. And if it is, that's bad enough. But they saw it, and they just kept silent about it. Or, you know, whether it's the Trump, they didn't report it to Trump, or they told it to Joe Biden, and Joe Biden said, let it go, for whatever reasons. That's intolerable.
On that cheery note, let's take a short break, and we'll be back with some quick hits.
We are back with the final segment of the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks podcast. JJ Sefton here with CBD and our very special guest, Buck Throckmorton. We're going to do some quick hits, but as we like to call them, or I like to call them, some buckshots. And we're going to start off with one of Buck's pet peeves and everyone's pet peeves, and he's just ripping it on this one. The wonders and glories of our future with electric vehicles.
Well, obviously, part of my obsession with electric vehicles is that it's the manifestation of the effort to absolutely destroy Western civilization, transportation, freedom, energy. It's the one that hits home right in our garages, because it's not even really about electric vehicles. It's about denying us personal transportation. That goes hand in hand with the whole crazy green agenda of eliminating everything that can reliably produce energy. But I did find, on a lighter note, just looking at recently autonomous cars and the trajectory of autonomous cars, and how our very credulous media kept reporting as a fact that autonomous cars were going to hit the roads by the late 2010s and by the early 2020s. They were going to be dominating market share, and soon it was going to take over the roads. And now, guess what? Despite being reported as a fact, it's just not feasible. And now that's finally being acknowledged. Electric vehicles are following the same trajectory. It's still being reported as a fact that they're going to replace internal combustion cars. They're not. They can't. And I've kind of enjoyed watching the failure of autonomous cars, just because EVs have seduced the same idiot journalists and idiots that control our lives and government.
You know, it's interesting. I live a few miles from a state route. It's called State Route 17. And on it, there are several high-end auto dealers. Like, there's a Lamborghini, there's a Jaguar, there's a McLaren, and there is a Tesla store. And the Tesla store has a bunch of their superchargers and a large parking lot that seems to be filled with Teslas, which is, you know, that's fine. You know, keeping a good stock available for purchases, I guess that's their business plan. That's fine with me. However, about a quarter mile up the road is a now closed restaurant, which had a very large parking lot. And I noticed a couple of weeks ago that empty parking lot is now full of Teslas. So the Tesla dealer is filled with Teslas, and they have overflowed into an auxiliary parking lot a couple hundred yards up the road. I find that fascinating. And I think it is indicative of what is going on right now. The bloom is off the rose of Tesla. The bloom is off the rose of electric vehicles. They are, you know, the second and third vehicles of well-to-do Americans, and I don't begrudge them that. But I don't think that these cars are going to be selling very well in the flyover states. And that is to their credit, because there isn't a chance in hell that any normal human being would buy a Tesla and drive 200 or 300 miles to visit mom and dad or visit the in-laws or whatever the hell it is. It simply does not work. And Buck has pointed this out in several of his excellent rants, that the technical requirements of America moving to electric vehicles is simply impossible. We cannot create a electrical infrastructure that would support those vehicles. And in addition to that, the limitations of those vehicles, you know, 200, 250 mile range, and then you need a 45 minute or an hour or 2 hour charge, is ridiculous. It simply will not work in the United States. Will it work in Belgium? Yeah, sure. Why not? I don't really give a shit what the Belgians do. You know, will it work in other first world countries? Yeah, absolutely. But it's not going to work in the United States.
You know, I think I thought of a good promotion maybe to promote the electric vehicle is like you get a free electric car with every toaster you buy. You know, the problem remains is how do you power your toaster? You know, people understand it's electricity doesn't come from that magical, you know, the magical orange electricity hose that plugs into the wall. It's generated by something, whether it's coal, oil, nuclear power, hydroelectric, or you name it. I have no problems with electric vehicles and so on and so forth, whatever it is, in order to, you know, whatever, theoretically replace the internal combustion engine. I have no problem if it's something that organically, there's a nice word, organically happens. If somebody builds a better mousetrap.
So, folks, we seem to have lost Buck Throckmorton.
I'm back. Sorry about that.
Oh, there you are. Oh, hey, we're about to wrap back.
Well, I just know what happened. My wife drove off. She was downstairs and she just drove off. And I'm in a room above the garage. When she started the car, it must have synced into the car.
Let me guess, she drives a Tesla, is that right?
Yeah, there it is. The truth comes out.
Tesla will jam Chinese spy balloons and Buck Throckmorton's phone there or computer. That's the there it is. We've cracked the code, ladies and gentlemen. But anyway, on my rant, I'll about to edit all this the chazarai out here. I was saying until somebody builds a better mousetrap. You know, and I have no problem, but let them build a better mousetrap, hopefully without government, subsidies or whatever. When you can have a 9-volt battery power the equivalent of a semi-trailer, you know, hauling iceberg lettuce from California to Rhode Island in an hour and a half, I'm all in favor of it. And I'll give up my gasoline-powered car. But until that time, we're not giving up anything. And the problem is, it's the true believers. It's the Greta Thunbergs. It's the Titicaca AOCs who really believe that all of this crap, if we just give up oil, it's going to magically transform the world. It is just not going to happen. And when that happens, we're going to have mass starvation and riots and chaos and disaster, which is the people who are manipulating the Greta Thunbergs and the AOCs of this world want. But that's another story. So you're pissing up a rope if you're trying to, you know, reason with people who do not want to be reasoned with. And I guess when everything fails, they'll still blame Donald Trump for it. So there you have it.
No, but that's exactly right. It's and that's, I guess, where my agenda is much bigger than electric cars. That's where it hits us individually. But the agenda of the left, you have a combination of the credulous fools like AOC, and then you have the really the equivalents of Pol Pot and Mao, who are going to reorganize society. And so step one is to eliminate 96% of all energy effectively by getting rid of fossil fuels. And then we'll figure it out and technology will catch up. And as JJ just said, no, that's where you have mass death, like in China and in Cambodia, where these people thought they could change human nature and that they could reorganize society. And even worse, do it out of sequence. Let's get rid of all fossil fuels first, and then we'll figure it out. That's a recipe for mass death.
What really frustrates me is that the market is perfectly capable of creating the most efficient means of transportation, both personal transportation and commercial transportation. If we let the market bear on these issues, it will get better. I mean, give you an example. I was away for a couple of days and I rented a car. You know, I go online and I choose a full-size sedan. I don't give a shit which one it is because, you know, I'm driving a couple hundred miles. I don't care. So I get a Honda electric vehicle, but it's a hybrid. And I have to admit that it seemed to work pretty well and I got very good gas mileage. I'm not sure if it was any better than a gasoline version of the same car, but it certainly worked. And if anybody out there wants to buy one, have at it. But had I not been able to get a car with a gasoline engine in it, I would have been very, very irritated because it is very obvious that at this point in the development of vehicles, electricity is simply not going to work. And as Sefton pointed out, you know, if there's some revolution in battery technology, as opposed to this creeping evolution in battery technology, and they can put a battery in a semi that can pull a load of lettuce from California to New York. And by the way, it's not just pulling the weight. They have to refrigerate it too. And those refrigeration units are run by kerosene or by propane. And that has to be carried too. So they're going to have to run refrigeration and pull an 80,000-pound vehicle 3,000 miles. If they can do that, fantastic. Just don't charge me $8 a head of lettuce or $12 a head of lettuce. But again,
I was going to say, the thing of it is, you know, you were talking about, you know, hybrid vehicles. When you look at basically a modern diesel locomotive, it's actually a diesel electric, and it's the diesel engines that are driving the electric motors that are in the wheels that pulls the thing along. Maybe something like this. But again, like you're saying, CBD, it's just not practical. It's not in real terms. It doesn't exist. I mean, yes, it exists, but it's a Tesla to me is a souped up golf cart. That's all it is. I mean, until they, like we said, it's pie in the sky.
And I have no problem with hybrid vehicles at all. In fact, sort of expect that by the 2030s, what we'll see is most cars are some form of hybrid. Why the heck not? You can use electricity if you want, if you find it cheaper at your domicile to charge up. If you're going cross country or long distance, you can use gasoline. And as JJ just pointed out, the two actually work very well together. Hybrids are, whether it's plug-in or the traditional Prius type, is amazing technology. And I fully expect that the current version of EVs that we're seeing now, which is pretty much the government-mandated version, will go away just like government-mandated light bulbs, which were the compact fluorescent did. Most consumers just have no use for it, and no matter how much the government tries to make it happen, it won't. It may well be that hybrids in the 2030s are like LED bulbs are now. That's the successor.
Oh, interesting point. As I said earlier, it wasn't a bad car. It worked fine. Didn't bother me at all. I don't know how much of a premium you pay for that technology. Personally, I wouldn't pay much more than a few hundred bucks because I simply don't care about it. But look, it worked. Anyway, so we've been running long. We have been running long for about 10 minutes.
Let's wrap it up. Gentlemen, this has been a phenomenal conversation. We've managed to, and Buck was saying earlier during one of the breaks that it's amazing how you have a list of things you want to talk about, but then you just go off on tangents. But when you guys are firing away on all cylinders, ha-ha, so to speak, unless it's an electric car, where it takes you is always fascinating and always interesting and always relevant. So, gentlemen, CBD, it's J.J. Sefton here and the great Buck Throckmorton as our guest. We endeavor to have you on much more often than just once in a blue moon. This has been the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks podcast. We will see you soon on the next one.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, folks.